Sarah, the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Everett?
So we've got some disturbing news out of Everett. You know how we were talking about the relative silence coming from the suspected or many suspected cat mutilators? Cat serial killers?
Yeah.
Or serial cat killers? Because it can't be a cat serial killer because that means the cat's a serial killer? Which I suppose is also a possibility, but probably not. Well, now we've got a series of cat mutilations in Everett. And when I say a series, I'm saying six of them.
What?
That just happened over the course of the last about 2 to 3 month period. They initially didn't think anything of it other than they thought maybe a wild animal was responsible. Because at the time of some of these cases, they were finding the limbs and only the limbs of these cats. But according to the Everett PD, they said a veterinarian's assessment said that this is a clear case of quote-unquote feline mutilation. They say, without much information to work from, we're looking for the public to help further our investigation. So, again, they initially believed that these animals were being killed by another animal of some kind. But now they're saying on June 13th, there were two instances of mutilation discoveries. Another time on June 15th, another time on July 27th, and then again on August 7th. So coming from June 13 to August 7, five instances of mutilations. Four of these cases happened on Rockefeller Avenue, which is kind of in the Bayside neighborhood. It's right off of a busy, but it's still a, it's off of a busy street off of Broadway a little bit, but it's really a residential neighborhood. It's kind of near the Everett Civic Auditorium, Everett High School. I'm wondering if it's because it's so close to Everett High School, maybe it's a teenager involved in all of this. But now the sort of we've gone from Thurston County and those cat mutilations, which seems a little bit different in how they were found, because in Thurston County, when we're talking about what was it, Port Orchard, Olympia, Lacey, those were cases where the cats were put on display, and that's not indicated in these stories.
Yeah, and a lot of time they took the spine
out. Yeah, they took the spine out and they flayed the cat. That's not what we're seeing here. They're saying a veterinarian suggested the limbs were removed in an intentional manner. So that's not just a dog or a coyote or whatever eating one of these cats and then leaving the limbs. This was intentional.
Yeah, and the last one was the most, and Lacey was the most diabolical. Who broke that story? Oh yeah, that was me! I did! That was the one where
okay, that's it's not
the
really
cat.
It's not really the time to brag about breaking a cat's. What about the cat's life?
Well, if the cat broke a story, I'd be just as enthused.
Oh, he's dead.
He put the head on top of a fence and put a missing cat poster right there. That was the most diabolical.
Yeah, I know. I think you're misusing the term diabolical, but I know what you mean.
Am I?
Yeah, that's not the correct use of the term diabolical. You can Google it all you want. You can say menacing. The cat was
characteristic of the devil.
Yeah, you're
or so evil as be.
Yeah, it's you're misusing it. But I understand what it is you're saying.
Disgracefully bad or unpleasant. That is which it is. Diabolical.
Okay, but again, if you have any information, contact the Everett Police Department because joking aside, this is pretty disgusting, and people generally start if they're a serial killer, they generally start by doing this kind of thing with animals, and then they quote-unquote graduate to human life, and we certainly don't want to get to that point. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
So a homeless encampment that was swept up in Seattle's University District. Oh, good news, they're back. This time they're taking over Playfield Park, again in the University District. Megan Rickey is a local. She tells Como TV that the city can probably be doing a better job dealing with the homeless.
I showed up to the park and there were a lot more tents than usual, a lot more people than usual. I think we could be doing so much more for outreach and shelters.
And so the question is, well, what are we doing right now? Well, the navigation team, in concert with the, it's SPD officers and it's social workers, they'll go up to the individuals before they sweep them out of their spot and they'll say, hey, we will give you shelter right now. We've got a bed for you to go to. We've got maybe a tiny home village for you to go to. We will connect you with the resources. Would you like them? Unfortunately, in a lot of cases, the person chooses not to take them up on the offer. In fact, here's Kara Kostinich of Como talking with one of the homeless people.
Did they ask you if you wanted any resources?
Yeah, they asked that. And I tell them, no, I don't need it. It's a waste of my time.
See, it's not a waste of your time, and you do need it. But because you don't think you need it, I no longer have sympathy for you. Unless this person is dealing with a mental illness that we don't know of, and he certainly did not sound that way. I know that doesn't always indicate things. But if you don't think you need it, then we need to be giving cops the authority to actually arrest people like this. They're breaking the law. If I break the law, I get arrested, I get a ticket. Something happens. There is a consequence. But when you're homeless, you can break the law without any consequence because they know that there are no consequences. So they're not going to change their behavior. If we did what's happening in Arlington or in Marysville, if we did this and said, look, you take us up on your offer or we're going to arrest you, you would have at least the carrot and the stick approach. You would have some sort of incentive for them to take you up on their offer, but that does not exist. It doesn't exist at all. And so what ends up happening is they say no, and then they just move somewhere else, and they are impacting the people who live in these neighborhoods. He does not care at all about the people who live in the neighborhood that he's impacting. He doesn't care. He doesn't give a damn. And I thought we had leadership in the mayor's office and the council's office. At some point, oh, you know, we want to do something. We got to help. Are you helping these people? Are you helping Linda, who lives next to the park? Because her stuff is getting stolen.
It was in my backyard yesterday. That's my umbrella. and he demanded a receipt.
Steals her umbrella and demands a receipt as if she's selling those umbrellas. Which, by the way, he didn't even pay for. How is this acceptable in any of our neighborhoods? How is it that when you look at some of the races for Seattle City Council, you give support to the people who are responsible for situations like this? Are you okay going down this road of homelessness impacting our neighborhoods and us having no say in the cleanups? Are you okay with that? Because I'm not. I live in Seattle. I live in South Lake Union. I see what's happening. And it's happening because we don't care enough to help these people, get them off the streets, nor do we care enough about the people who are directly impacted living in these neighborhoods dealing with this homelessness situation. This park has been taken over by homeless people, tents everywhere. That means it's unsafe for kids. And yet at the same time, in King County, we go ahead and say yes to another levy to fund our parks. What are we funding our parks for if we don't care enough about them, if we're not going to allow taxpayers to use them, if they're unsafe for kids? What's the point in all of this? And do you hear any sense of urgency coming from this mayor or from this council dealing with someone like this? I don't need the help. Why would I take them up on this offer? What do I need from them? I don't need it. Don't want it. Okay, then you don't get to live here anymore. The only people who are standing in the way of helping someone like that is this Seattle City Council, the Lisa Herbolds of the world, the Shama Sawants of the world, the Deborah Warrises of the world. Nothing is being done. And I feel like we've just given up. And maybe in Seattle we have. I mean, do you live in Seattle? Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. Have we just completely given up on this? Because that's how it feels. I don't want to believe we've given up. Because that would mean giving up on our communities and giving up on the people who are in desperate need of some sort of help. I think it's a moral obligation we have to help these people. I hope we haven't given up. But the more and more and more of this happening every single day with no consequences whatsoever and no demands from the public beyond just some quick 10-second blurb in a news story on Como or Cairo or King. Like, beyond that, what are people doing? I hear you saying we're fed up, but what are we doing about it? How much more do I have to talk about this before something changes? How much more do I have to blog about it at ktth.com before this changes? Love to hear from you. Send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. It's Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. If you had the KTH smartphone app on your phone right now, you would have just gotten an alert for our next guest. When we have good guests, when we have great guests, when we have breaking news, you get an alert on your phone. So if you have not yet decided to download the KTH smartphone app, stop waiting. Get it now. You can text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770 or just search for KTTH on your smartphone's app store. You can take the station with you wherever it is you go. Text app to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the east side?
As we talked about for the last couple days, the ACLU of Washington is claiming a new agreement between some school districts and the Spokane County Sheriff's Department could lead to abject abuse, a claim that I believe to be utterly ridiculous. It simply allows the Sheriff's Department to review live surveillance footage during school emergencies, like, God forbid, a school shooting. Joining me on the line to talk it through is Spokane County Sheriff show friend, Ozzy Knezovich. Sheriff, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Jason.
So let's go through exactly what the agreement would allow for.
I think you summed it up really quickly in that intro. It is for emergency situations. Let's say we did have a school shooting, a hostage situation, bomb threat, that type of situation would give us the ability to help direct assets into the school and resolve the issues. The ACLU's claims are baseless. But it's not surprising, given their propensity not to tell the truth on these type of issues.
Yeah, it seems to me that the goal of theirs is to simply get people suspicious of law enforcement, regardless of the situation. And one of the quotes that was given by Shankar Narayan, he is the director of Technology and Liberty Project at the ACLU of Washington, in the Times is quoted as saying, quote, a health-related emergency could be a student choking on a sandwich, property damages included. What happens if a student breaks a chair or acts out in some way that teenagers often do? Suddenly, that has gone from being a disciplinary issue resolved within the school to a law enforcement issue. The example seems rather ridiculous, but number one, as much as I assume you guys would like to be able to see a kid choking so you can tell someone that it's happening and save that kid's life, you're not going after a student who breaks the chair as the student is rushing to help someone who's choking on a sandwich.
You know, absolutely not. Again, it's just another example of the rhetoric that the ACLU and, quite frankly, many activists today use to demonize law enforcement. We would use this simply to save lives. And, you know, they also mentioned the school-to-prison pipeline. And Jason, I will tell you that if there's one organization that is responsible for the increase in that pipeline, it would be the ACLU and their policies, which has eliminated accountability within the schools. Kids are not held responsible for the things that they do anymore, and the teachers really have lost control of their classrooms.
Well, why do you blame that specifically on the ACLU?
I blame that on the ACLU because of the policies that they have pounded into the schools for years and years and years, and all the lawsuits that they have brought forward over the years. And this is basically social engineering by lawsuit.
So why do you think they're doing what it is they're doing? What's your take on this? Because obviously you're hearing from some folks about this controversy.
You know, I think that the reason they're doing this is at this time is, again, to demonize law enforcement, erode the public trust in their law enforcement, and paint us as the bad guys rather than the people that respond to save people's lives.
So to respond specifically to some of their concerns about potential overreach, in the agreement that you have with school districts, would you ever use the, are you staffing just an individual to watch kids over these cameras looking for potential law issue, legal issues?
Absolutely not. We would use these when we get notified that we have an emergency developing, and we would access the cameras at that point and, again, be able to direct law enforcement into the area of concern, or EMS, medics, firefighters. The whole public safety network could be directed and brought into a school in a much safer way rather than going in blind as we usually do.
Well, and part of the issue is when there is an emergency on campus, people who you might be relying on for information might not be correct. And certainly if you're able to look at a video that shows what the potential shooter or the bad guy is wearing, what kind of weapon they have, where exactly they are, that's going to make it very much easier for your deputies or any law enforcement to actually engage with the shooter.
It will give us an idea of where we need to go and what we're actually addressing when we get there. Is it one shooter? Is it two shooters? Is it a situation where we have a hostage situation already formed? There's a gambit of things that can be done. But again, the ACLU wants to erode that faith and confidence in law enforcement in America. And, you know, they've been doing it for a very long time. In 2014, the ACLU came out with a report titled War Comes Home. And basically, the subtitle was the militarization of America's law enforcement. In that article, on page 36, you will find that they say that the Spokane County Sheriff's Office had affected our African-American population by 588 arrests, contacts. Jason, the number was 4.
Yeah. Where do you think they got that number from?
They lied to the American people.
You think they lied? Do you think they made it up?
They did. They used a mathematical equation that, to this day, I still can't get to make 4 equal 588.
Yeah. I feel like you'd have to do a lot of somersaults on that one.
You really do. And the worst part is they never corrected it. They acknowledged it. They acknowledged what they did, and after about 4 days of, one explanation after another, they finally went, well, you know, it's based on a disparity equation. Well, you can't even make it work by, per 100,000 population, as they claim.
Yeah, look, so, I don't think they're good faith actors in all of this. I think they have a very clear agenda, which, you know what, if that's their agenda, that's their agenda. But they hide under this idea that they stand up for constitutional rights, only they're incredibly selective in the constitutional rights that they want to defend.
Exactly. And they actually, in my opinion, erode some of our rights by restricting the ability of the American people to, you know, protect themselves. So I really don't understand the entire dialogue that they've brought forward in a logical fashion, because it's not based on logic. It's based on fear-mongering and falsehoods.
Has it been effective, in your opinion, just dealing in Spokane County? Have some of these talking points from the ACLU impacted the work that you're doing in the community?
Most definitely, in the disparity area, especially. Again, in 2014, they came out with this report saying we impacted 588 African Americans. Our SWAT team alone, mind you. And it was only 4. And none of them were for drug operations, drug search warrants, as they claim.
Yeah.
So they're not honest with the American people. They are trying to social engineer their own view of what the Constitution says.
Yeah.
And Lord help you if you step up and point that out, because they're the first one that's going to trample on your First Amendment right.
Well, if you want to read more details about this and get my general take, folks, just text the keyword RANTZ, RANTZ, to the number 1-800-465-8770. And I'll send you a link to my story on this very topic with my analysis. Again, text the keyword RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to read and then post it on your Facebook and Twitter feeds so we can shine a spotlight on this nonsense coming from the ACLU. We've been talking with the Sheriff of Spokane County, Ozzie Knezovich. Sheriff, thank you so much for stopping by. I really do appreciate it.
No problem, Jason.
Snoqualmie, Mercer Island, Des Moines.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Shoreline, Woodinville, Burien.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. What does that mean? It means it's time for the Big Local, which is brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. The concept of the Big Local, very, very simple to understand. We've made it idiot-proof. Even Tom can figure it out, right? What's the Big Local? Explain it.
Big Local is when we focus on cities outside of Seattle, because that's what the media is super focused on. And because you called me an idiot, I would like to play a game. Go ahead and text in to 1-800-465-8770 how many beers it takes to get you drunk. And that number will be more than Jason Rant.
Yeah, probably. A 16-year-old in Puyallup drove his car into the side of a McDonald's, mistaking the accelerator for the brakes. Now, it's a little bit more detailed than that. So it happened yesterday around 1 p.m., just before 1 p.m. The police department says the teen spilled a drink in his lap. As a result of that, became distracted and accidentally slammed on the gas instead of the brake as he was driving away from the McDonald's. Now, that I understand. Certainly, if your first instinct when you drop something on you while driving usually involves stopping the car. And if you're 16 years old, you don't have that many hours behind the wheel. This is a mistake that could technically happen to any 16-year-old. The only difference is, in this case, he drove it into the side of the McDonald's. It broke through the side. It knocked over. In the interior was one of the beverage dispensers, so that stopped over. The McDonald's has been closed down. Good news is no one was hurt. It was a minor injury, someone hurting their foot or something, but they're fine. And the driver's fine.
That's not what they meant when they said drive-thru.
Yeah. Here's a question, and I'd like to hear specifically from the parents at 1-800-465-8770. Let's say this was your kid in this situation, because we all understand that when you're young, when you're a young driver, heck, when you're an older driver, you make the same mistake sometimes. How soon after this do you say, we're going to let you drive on your own again? Like, do you wait a week? Do you wait a month? You do have, especially when, you know, it's a 16-year-old. Again, it's all an innocent mistake. No one was hurt. It might be expensive, but I'm assuming they have some kind of insurance on both ends. You're not going to immediately say you're never driving a car again, because the parent generally wants to use a 16, 17, 18-year-old driver to do a lot of odds and ends for them. Take your younger brother to practice, go to the store for me, blah, 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 blah. So, parents, how long do you give before you let your kid drive again in a scenario like this?
When did you start pushing public transportation?
Okay, but that's short term. That has to be short term. There's no way that you're going to let this stop that driver from ever driving again. So that's all I'm asking. 1-800-465-8770. Because my assumption is the kid knows they did something wrong. The kid in this case, I guarantee you, knows it. That kid's going to probably drive as safely as humanly possible from here on out.
Hot take.
So what do you really punish?
Give him a scooter, a bike.
But that's not realistic. That's just not going to happen. We got a text message from the 425. With three kids who've all been in accidents, we made them drive right away so they weren't scared of it. And I think that's actually a really good point of accidents happen. So long as you're learning from your mistakes, why freak them out and get them so sort of wrapped up in their own heads about what they might end up doing that it will be dangerous for them to drive when they inevitably get behind a wheel, right? I was in an accident one time when I was younger, but this was after I got my permit, super minor. And the whole idea was get right back and do it again. It wasn't my fault in this case. Go back out and just don't get too much in your head, because especially when you're a young driver who's already gone through this, man, I imagine that you're super nervous now, and that nervousness might preoccupy you, and then you will get into another accident.
I knocked over a mailbox, backed right into it, knocked it over. In front of all my friends, too.
That was last week.
I know.
Literally,
I thought,
last week.
This
was,
we're
talking about when
stories.
No, but when you were 16. That was last week.
Right, you didn't have to say that.
Well, I just want to be honest with the audience. 425, another one. About a week after buying my first car, I backed into my sister's driveway. When I left, I accidentally put it in reverse and gunned it to make it out of the steep driveway and took out her garage door and a piece of the house. Yikes. That's someone who probably should not be behind the wheel. 1-800-465-8770. Meanwhile, according to a federal auditor, the state's maximum security lockup for juvies in Chehalis, it's called the Green Hill School, it is apparently dramatically understaffed. And as a result, it's leading to some pretty dangerous scenarios for not just the staff members, but also some of the younger offenders in the prison. King 5 quotes the auditor's report. It says that the Green Hill School is, quote, out of compliance on most shifts, and this makes the facility highly vulnerable for sexual abuse incidents. And then they say there's also some other safety problems. This all, again, according to an auditor with the U.S. Department of Justice. Now, former Green Hill security officer Chris Stubblefield, he tells King 5 that as a result of really bad staffing, inadequate staffing, he was brutally attacked.
My life was in danger, definitely. It was like watching myself dying. I just, I was being hit and knocked out. It's not a safe place to work. Some wings were left with like one person that may have had a census of maybe 12 to 16 residents.
Were they living up to the required staff ratio?
I don't believe they were.
So at the time, the staff ratio was required to be 1 to 8. So one staff member for every 8 prisoners. And that's only during the waking hours. So that's not good what they were doing. But the good news is apparently Washington State Department of Children, Youth and Family Secretary Ross Hunter, he says, yeah, staffing has been a major concern.
It was my number one staffing need. And it was the number one budget ask that we had coming into last year's budget. We're going to have to deal with young people who've committed more violent crimes. Our job is to try and keep everybody safe. And I thought I needed more staff in order to do that.
And so to that end, he asked for more staff, and now he's gotten the approval.
We think that if we keep youth safe from violence, that will also keep staff safe. Both the governor and the legislature responded, and we got 57 new staffers to spread across our facilities that started in July, 5 weeks ago. If we're going to teach staff how to be competent counselors, competent therapists, to do the kind of dialectical behavior therapy that we do that is the state of the art in this business, we're going to need to be able to have a stable and a really super well-trained workforce to do that.
Okay, so the end of this is all good news, I suppose, right? It's getting the staff members, they're going through and doing the training that's necessary. Why are we not having a conversation about what this actually means? Because this has happened yet again, another incident happening under Jay Inslee's watch. And Jay Inslee is not getting any blame for this. Why is that? Why is it okay for this yet again to happen under his watch? Because what's been going on as he's been running for office and as he's been, quote unquote, running the state of Washington, we've had instance after instance after instance of embarrassing situations like this, particularly on staffing. Look what's happening at Western State Hospital. They lost their certification. They lost about $54 million in federal funding as a result of that. And a lot of that had to do with lack of staff. That was putting not just the staff members' safety on the line, but also the patient's safety on the line. And now we have, yet again, the same exact kind of issue. Why is this so hard to figure out? Why do you need to go through an auditor report, an investigation, before this gets on your desk, before this takes on a sense of urgency? Why does it feel like Jay Inslee here is getting a pass? Oh, because he is. Got it. And then finally, over in Squim, almost 1,000 people showed up to the Guy Cole Event Center to learn about a proposed opioid treatment facility that would be open near downtown. Now, King 5 says the Jamestown Sklallam Tribe plans to transform nearly 20 acres of their land into a healing campus with an outpatient treatment center for opioid addiction and would eventually have a mental health facility. Now, some of the patients would be bused in from nearby communities, and as you probably expect, it's kind of freaking some folks out.
My contention is that Squim is the wrong location for a large map clinic.
Now, we generally hear things like that whenever something like this comes about, that no one necessarily wants to live next to these areas, even though we all admit that they have to go somewhere, but no one necessarily wants to live right next door or operate a business next door. In fact, Jose's famous salsa owner, Angie Garcia, she tells King 5 that she's concerned specifically the city of Squim, or at least this part of Squim, is not the right place for it. So concerned, she decided to start a movement, or at least put a sign up in her window, that says Save Our Squim.
I think it's really peaceful. I think it's quiet. I think kids are able to go out and play. It's a medically assisted treatment program. And basically what we've heard is people will go and get methadone. Yes, they want to help these people that need to get help. But I feel like their main deal is they don't want it in the heart of Squim.
Now, to be fair, not everyone is opposed to this. There were some voices, obviously, when you got 1,000 people showing up, some voices are going to be in support.
We should be proud that this clinic is going to be in our community and that we can, that we played a role in combating this horrendous epidemic.
Okay, look, here's my advice on all of this for all you folks over in Squim. And first to the leaders who are in charge of this. Make sure you're actually fully engaging the community from the start. If you don't, you make this harder than it needs to be. Now, again, I'm not going to pretend to know that much about downtown Squim and the needs of the community. I don't spend much time there at all. In fact, I probably only spent maybe in all of my life about an hour in Squim. But if you don't get a buy-in from the start, if you don't convince the people that are there that you're on the right side of this, if you don't convince at least the majority of the people who showed up, this is not going to end well. You're never going to have the full community buy-in that you absolutely need for this to be a success. Do not do things in secret. Do things as openly as humanly possible. Do not start a meeting by saying, hey, we'd love to hear your input before we go ahead with this, before we allow the land for the Jamestown Tsklallam tribe to do this. We just want to hear from you first. And then we find out later that you've already agreed to it behind the scenes and you're just going through the formalities. Don't do that. That's never the right way to go about these projects. I know that because I live in an area that had a tiny home village get installed right next door to me, or about a block and a half away from me. And they pretended, the city that we don't talk about in this segment, they pretended that they hadn't already made the decision when they did. That never leads to buy-in. And that's going to hurt not just the folks who are trying to make this work, but it's also going to hurt the patients who are showing up, because then they're looked at as visitors that they don't want, that they're not welcome. So for all that you care about, all the care that you want to put into these people and the issues, make sure you put equal amounts of care into the buy-in. Otherwise, it's going to be a huge failure. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio on this Friday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in all week. Really do appreciate it. We're having the conversation about rhetoric and what the rhetoric actually means. Is it inspiring violence? Have we gone a little bit too far? And I think a reasonable person can say, yes, the rhetoric is going a little bit too far. Unfortunately, the folks on the left seem to only say that Donald Trump is responsible for the rhetoric. But unfortunately, we're at this point now where we're pushing actively on MSNBC, doxing and the harassment of people based on their political beliefs. And I think that goes too far. And I think what's going to end up happening, someone's going to get hurt. And there was a conversation last night with Chris Hayes that was so ridiculous and dishonest. So ridiculous and dishonest. And they were talking about Stephen Ross. Stephen Ross is the chairman of a company that runs a whole bunch of different businesses like Equinox. He's the owner of the Dolphins, and he happens to be hosting a Trump fundraiser. And apparently that makes him an evil person, a bad person. In fact, it's so evil and wrong that MSNBC contributor Eli Mistal told Chris Hayes, oh, people should be protesting outside of Stephen Ross's house. In fact, more than protesting, bring pitchforks. It was absurd.
People of color are already targets under this administration.
Right.
I have no problem with shining the light back on the donors who fund this kind of racialized hate. I go further. I want pitchforks and torches outside this man's house in the Hamptons.
Oh, and by the way, why pitchforks and torches? It's 2019. Why is that his reference?
So, like LED flashlights and
cell phone images of torches. There's an app for that, right? And
right.
Pitchforks. Where do you even buy a pitchfork?
At the hay.
Like
store?
Swiffers.
At the farmer's store.
Swiffers and apps of fire. Just, it's so old school.
I've been to the Hamptons. It's very nice. There's no reason why it has to be.
I've been to the Hamptons. There's no reason it has to be nice. We can just go ahead and protest. Yeah.
There's no reason why he should have a nice little party, right? No, there's no reason why people shouldn't be able to be outside of his house and making their
demonstrating
voices.
Totally.
Oh, totally. Oh my God, we should totally do that. By the way, if we gave out the address of Eli Mistal or Chris Hayes, all of a sudden they'd be saying, oh, you're trying to send the Proud Boys here to murder us. Oh, I see what it's about. You're going after us. You're trying to hurt us. But when they do it against people who support Trump, it's all good.
Fully yes. Understood that they do not, they
totally.
Regret the
totally.
Inside.
Oh, yeah. I there
totally.
Have been
oh, yeah.
Peaceful protests outside Mitch McConnell's.
What did he just say? Did you hear that? Can we rewind just for a second? What?
Peaceful protests outside Mitch McConnell's house, and I imagine there will be peaceful protests outside this, which is, again, it's all speech, right? That's peaceful protest, the right to assembly under the First Amendment.
Okay. Peaceful protests outside of Mitch McConnell's house.
Somebody out there with some booty dolls in these motherfuckers. That's what I'm hoping.
What?
Hopefully somebody out there with some booty dolls in these.
Yeah, you know somebody is. That's probably what it is. Just stab the motherfucker in the heart, please.
Totally peaceful. How did we miss that peaceful event? I like, don't you like peaceful events? I would have liked to go hang out. That sounds fun, a peaceful event, talking about stabbing people in the heart, wishing them dead.
The definition of peaceful is just, you know, it's tricky.
Yeah. The left seems okay with this. This is what the left seems to want. MSNBC is actively calling for this. They're actively calling for people to go outside of the houses of people with whom they disagree with politically. We had the story, what was it, about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. There was this rash of instances of which Trump staff members, members of his cabinet, members of senior administrator, all these things, were getting hassled at restaurants. They were being told, you can't eat here. They had people slamming in their, screaming in their faces, trying to run them out of town. You can't tell me that rhetoric is going too far while you're also saying we need to make life as difficult as humanly possible for people whom hold political positions that we disagree with. Now, I know they want to pretend that Trump supporters are outside of the mainstream. President Trump is President Trump. He won the election. That means by definition, his positions or his presidency is well within the mainstream of America. Even if he lost, the fact that he would have had tens of millions of people supporting, that's a mainstream position. I get that that upsets Eli Mistal or Chris Hayes. I get that. They want to live in a world in which they get to dictate what everybody believes and what everything. They want to be in charge. I want to be in charge. The difference is I don't want to have the lives of people I disagree with politically interrupted and harassed and made to feel unsafe. I can win arguments with words. I can debate someone. I can hopefully inspire people out there who are listening to my voice or who read my blog at KTTH.com to take different positions. I'm comfortable with anyone who disagrees with me, and I'm comfortable having those conversations with people who disagree with me. You know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to show up against outside someone's house simply because they have the audacity to disagree with something that I believe in. We live in a world in which you have to understand people are going to disagree. They don't want to live in that world. And they call conservatives fascists. Conservatives are the fascists. They're the ones who want to frighten people into submission, bully people into either changing their mind or not feeling comfortable speaking out in public. I don't want to live in that world. I don't want to live in that country. And if we're going to decide that that's how we're going to go about things, I have to assume that Chris Hayes realizes that he can be the victim of that as well. The people who show up outside of Tucker Carlson's home and try to harass him, you know very well that conservatives can do that against you. And I don't think you're going to like it. And I think you're going to look at something like that and you're going to question whether or not your safety is on the line. And you'd be right to question that. And yet you find it okay when we're talking about others. It's disgusting. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.